a long while. He didn't rock her world with this. She grew up in one herself, just a different one from a different fine Southern family.
You liked her?
Marcus noted, still watching me closely. She liked me, I replied.
I'm not thinking that's a good response.
He muttered like he wasn't talking to me. I let the stem of my glass go, turned more fully to him, too, and reached out, putting my hand on his thigh. When I did, I realized Marcus Sloan did not only take care of his grooming, he took care of other things, too. The muscle beneath the fine material was solid. My. I tore my thoughts from what my hand was encountering, somehow found the strength to leave it right where it was, and told him, "She liked me, and she was kind to me. She gave me a tin of cookies she baked herself every Christmas my mama worked for her. And on my 13th birthday, she gave me an Adderpearl necklace."
That's very sweet,
Marcus murmured. I nodded. It was.
Did she add more pearls after your 13th?
He asked. She died 3 days after my birthday.
Christ,
he bit out low. And I hawked it for a bus ticket out of there when I was 19 after I caught my boyfriend in the act, sleeping with my best friend, who was my best friend only to get to my boyfriend. I went direct home and told my mama all about it. I barely got the story out before she slapped me across the face and told me to get over it. Life was shit, and then you died, so no purpose wasting it bitching about men being assholes when there wasn't a being with a penis who wasn't all asshole. And furthermore, I was a fool for having any friends. Women were backstabbers and man-stealers. They talked behind your back more than they said anything to your face, but when they said something straight to your face, if it was sweet, you could guarantee it was a lie.
This isn't something good, Daisy,
he informed me, not looking happy. It's all I got, Marcus, I told him, but I gave his thigh a quick squeeze. And it sounds bad, but Miss Anna May knew. She might not have known exactly what was going to cut it, but she knew something would. And she knew I was a good girl. She knew I listened to her, and she knew all the things she taught me I'd taken in. So she knew I'd need that necklace one day. Now, I think she might have hoped that I'd wear it at my wedding to a wonderful man who'd help me fill my house with lots of babies. But I reckon she didn't hold a lot of hope for that, and knew I'd need it for what I needed it for, and she'd be happy I had it when I needed it, and that it was her who gave it to me. He kept hold of my gaze for a moment after I quit talking, then he looked down at his drink and twisted it side to side in his fingers. He looked reflective and upset, and I didn't like that. "Honey bunches of oats?" I whispered. His gaze came right back to mine, and doing so, he made my heart warm right up in a way I knew sure as certain it would never again be cold. Not ever. Not ever again. Not as long as Marcus was with me. "It don't sound good, but it was," I told him, real quiet, moved by his look that I felt in my heart. I lost her, but even though she'd been gone for years, she was there for me in that moment when I needed her most. It wasn't good for me there. And even with what happened to me in that parking lot since I left that place, it's never again been that bad. That's how bad it was. She wanted me to have the means to escape when I'd had enough. It was the most precious gift anyone ever gave me. The time she gave it by handing me that box, and the time I hawked it and bought myself freedom.
"There's no more good?"
he asked. "Smithy," I told him.
"Other than him?"
"Letitia," I went on.
"Daisy, you understand me."
I shook my head and gave his thigh a squeeze. "Sugar, you aren't getting it. I had her for a short while, but I had her. Do you know where I'd be if I didn't?"
"No, where would you be?"
"Back there in a place where every day was hell. I'd probably have a man who drank or gambled or shot up or beat me or all those. Or I'd have a string of them, none of them treating me right. A job that I hated working, doing it with people who thought they were better than me. My mama alternately hitting me up for money or getting in my face being ugly. Miss Anna May taught me to keep my head held high, darling, and I was struggling with that." I leaned into him. "Really struggling. They would have beaten me. She gave me the way out when without her doing that, I'd have no way out. And here I am in a fancy restaurant in a great town with a handsome man. It'd make her happy. Real happy, baby." When I was done talking, his attention moved to my hair, as did his hand. He pulled some curls over my shoulder and stared at them resting there.
You know why it was?
He murmured to my hair. Pardon? His gaze came to mine, and the hand he'd used to shift my hair he now used to sweep his fingertips across my cheekbone in a whisper of a touch that was there and gone. But the precious memory of that touch would remain until the day I quit breathing.
People live lives they hate,
he said, resting his arm along the top of the booth beside me.
They see a patch of light. The only thing that drives them is to snuff it out.
I gave him a small smile and said, not mean. That's sweet sugar, but that's like telling a homely girl all the other girls bully her because they're jealous.
So what you're telling me is that all that's happened to you is just about predators preying on the weak?
My head twitched.
You aren't weak, Daisy,
he stated. No, I wasn't. I'd been knocked down again and again. I just kept getting up, and I was still standing in platforms with great hair. I swallowed.
And those other girls bully the homely girl for one reason only. They're bitches. And that says a fuck of a lot more about them than that homely girl, and not one single bit of it is good.
My fingers tensed reflexively into his thigh. You're right, sugar, I whispered.
I know,
he returned.
As for you, why would a rich woman in a graceful mansion give the girl you thought you were the time of day?
I felt the sting before I knew what was happening, and I blinked rapidly to keep them at bay. Marcus didn't wait for me to answer. He gave me his answer.
Because she was old enough and lived enough life with enough abundance in that life to see you for what you were. Not a beautiful girl who would become a beautiful woman. Not a sweet girl who was strong and smart who would become so much more than her mother, it's laughable. Not a bold woman a weak man has to beat down to make him feel strong, or fuck around on before she realizes she could do better and scrapes him off. No, she saw all of that. Just without the bad shit leaking in.
I was now breathing deep along with blinking a lot in order to stop myself from losing it. But even though Marcus saw it, I knew he even had to feel it. He was still far from done.
I bet if you went back to that place, all those people would still be in it living lives they hate, and you'd sweep through looking like a movie star, and they'd take one look at you and know they had every right to be jealous of you, to hate you, to beat you. Talk about you, cheat on you, and they're so entrenched in their bitterness because they only have themselves to blame that they didn't make their lives better. The only regret they'd have is that they hadn't been able to drag you right down to where they are, smother your light, make you go dark.
His fingers peeled mine from his thigh and curled around tight, holding my hand right there, and he kept going.
Miss Anna May didn't give you those pearls because she thought for a second they'd get close to beating you down. She gave you those pearls because she knew without a doubt they never would.
Please stop talking, I whispered, seeing as he'd gone all fuzzy because my eyes were trembling with tears and I could take not one little bit more. For a second he didn't say anything and he didn't move. Then he lifted my hand and touched his lips to my fingers. He put it right back, curling them around his thigh again, and he looked to his bourbon. He raised his glass and took a sip. I drew in a shaky breath. Then I removed my hand from his thigh and reached for my own drink. After I'd thrown back a slightly unladylike sip, I returned the glass to the table and my attention with it.
Daisy.
Please, please. I was still whispering, this time to my glass. I can't take more of your sweet.
Baby, you need to move your glass. Your appetizer is here.
My head came up. The waiter smiled benignly at me. I moved my glass. Marcus moved his arm to around my back and pulled me to his side so I was tucked close. I picked up my fork in order to dive into my crab cake. I had the succulent-looking crab halfway to my mouth when Marcus asked,
"Where did you grow up?"
I braced but answered, deciding that it was an innocent enough question and if he pressed for more, I'd shut it down. He didn't press for more. He scooped out some of his oysters Rockefeller. And we ate.
Marcus.
Marcus got her drunk. He did this without remorse. It bought him a good deal of her amazing laughter. It also got him the bonus of her passing out in his car, this meaning he didn't have to have words with her about where he fully intended to spend the night that night. He carried her to her apartment and took off her shoes, her necklace, her bracelets, and carefully slid out her earrings, but left her in her dress when he tucked her into bed.
He left her room, closing the door behind him, at the same time sliding his phone out of the inside pocket of his suit jacket. He flipped it open and made the call.
"Boss,"
Brady answered, sounding mostly alert, somewhat drowsy. Within a minute, he'd issued his order. He finished with,
"Hopefully that pawn shop will still be open. If it isn't, maybe someone who ran it will be around and they kept records. But I don't care what it takes, Brady. Even if you have to pull Nightingale into it, find those pearls and get them to me."
"You got it, Mr. Sloan."
"Good night,"
Marcus said and hung up. Then he took off his suit jacket, his tie, shirt, shoes, and socks, and he stretched out on Daisy's couch, tucking a toss pillow under his head and pulling one of her throws over his body. He closed his eyes, and within seconds, with Daisy resting safe in the next room, Marcus was asleep.
Chapter 7 Deal. Daisy. I opened my eyes and saw Daisy's. Then I realized I was hung over. On this realization and the others that bounded in after it, in a tizzy I pushed the covers down and saw I was in my dress from last night. I touched my naked earlobe, felt my necklace gone, and looked back to the daisies to see my jewelry sitting at the base of the vase. Then I turned, saw the other side of the bed was empty, stared at the fluffed pillows I hadn't slept on, but grabbed one of them and pulled it to me to take a whiff. It still smelled of Marcus, but this morning only faintly. He hadn't slept like I assumed he slept the night before, holding me. He'd taken off. I dropped to my back and closed my eyes in despair. Wonderful. I'd had a date the night before with the classiest man I'd ever met, and I got drunk, passed out in his car, and he'd had to put me to bed. At least Marcus Sloan proved another way he was all class. He might have made sure I was comfortable, but he didn't give himself a show by taking my clothes off. He also didn't stick around. My hands balled into fists, my nails digging into the palms. Because I was me, in the back of my mind, I knew if I was stupid enough to take a shot at the something special that was a man like Marcus Sloan, I'd screw it up with him, and there I did it. The first date! I got shit-faced, and I remembered laughing too much, being way too nosy, asking too many questions, and doing that staring at him like every word he spoke dropped a bar of gold in my lap. If drunken memory served, every time I laughed or touched his thigh, arm, or hand, he looked at me the same way. I still passed out in his car, just like white trash. And now he was gone. Ugh, I mumbled, the dull headache and subtle queasy feeling making it easier for me, just a touch, not to scream at my stupidity, find a way to kick my own ass, even mentally, or burst into tears. Instead, since I was Daisy, and from the moment I came out bawling, I had no choice, I shoved the covers aside and got on with it. I pushed myself out of bed, pulled my dress off on the way to the bathroom, and did my morning bathroom routine, this time adding the complicated procedure of getting all my makeup off. My hair still rocked it since I rocked doing my hair, so I left it as is. I went back into my room, tugged on a pair of baby pink drawstring fleece shorts that had diamante sprinkled along the curves of the seams of the pockets, and a skin-tight white tank top that had emblazoned all across the front in hot pink and glittery diamond rhinestones. Nothing a little sparkle won't fix. My mantra. Though that morning, post fucking up my date with Marcus Sloan, I knew all the sparkle in the world wouldn't fix the feeling I had sitting in the pit of my belly that had nothing to do with being hungover. I moved to my door in order to get water, for the aspirin I needed, and coffee, because every true red, white, and blue American drank coffee, and find alternate ways to avoid the pain of a heart I refused to acknowledge I'd broken my damned self by acting like the white trash everyone thought I was. I opened my door and stopped dead. It was October, dead on fall, and the sun hadn't yet hit the sky like only sun in Denver could, washing the base of a glorious mountain range in bright. But the rising sun was doing its best, lighting a room where every surface was covered with a spray of daisies. Some of them were pretty white ones with little yellow buttons in the middle. Others were white with green buttons. Some a mixture of both, and others were pink or orange, surrounding the black button blazing out to a startling yellow. Others were red. Then there were those that were coral. There were also those with color combinations. On a routine basis, I carefully clipped their ends, added fresh water with food, all in an effort to keep them alive as long as I could. Over the weeks, I'd had to throw some away, but they were of a quality that most of them were still going strong. And right then, in the midst of them, lying on his stomach on my couch, one long arm having fallen off the side, my throw having slid down to his waist, the delineation of the muscles of his tanned back on show, his head turned from me, resting on a toss pillow, his thick, dark hair disheveled, lay Marcus. He hadn't left the drunken, stripping floozy who'd passed out in his Mercedes in her bed and taken off. Like a gentleman, when she wasn't in the throes of a trauma, he'd slept on the couch. I looked at him, his long body stretched out amongst the daisies, asleep, but having stayed close so he could make sure I was safe, safe from anything, even nightmares, and I made a noise in the back of my throat I couldn't control. When I did, I watched his body twitch, then he came up on his forearms and his sleepy blue eyes turned my way. He looked ready to move further, but he caught himself when he saw me. I stared into his eyes, knowing I probably made noise getting up, doing my thing in the bathroom, getting dressed. But it was my quiet sob that had woken him. Marcus Sloan. God, he killed me. I leaned my shoulder against the door jamb, drawing in breath through my nose, controlling the tears with some effort, taking more time to swallow them back. After another breath, watching him watching me, unmoving, I spoke. You know what got me through?
Baby,
he whispered, but still didn't move. He just lay there on his stomach, up on his forearms, his head turned to me, his eyes glued to me, just like he knew that's what I needed him to do. Just that, stay on my couch and let me say what I needed to say. Thought I was nothing, I shared softly. He pushed up, the muscles in his biceps bulging, threw off the blanket and turned to sit on his ass. He hadn't taken off his trousers. That couldn't be a comfortable way to sleep. But a gentleman in a lady's home got as comfortable as he could get, but unless he was invited to do it, he didn't take off his trousers. Lord, Marcus Sloan. Proved it to me, that guy, I told him. Raping me. The world had been giving me signs since I was born, but he proved it to me.
I need you to come here,
Marcus requested gently. I ignored him and kept going. Told myself that. Was certain of it at first. The thing was, if I was nothing, why was someone sending me daisies? That cut it for him. He started to push up. Quickly, I asked, please don't. Please let me finish. He settled, gaze locked to me, and he showed me with his expression that he didn't like it, but he kept his place. For me. So pretty, I whispered. So bright and happy. They were everywhere. I wanted to think dark thoughts. I wanted to cut myself down. I just couldn't keep it up. And it wasn't Miss Hannah Mae this time who helped me see what it was important to see.
Darling.
I beat them away, but they came right back, and I knew it when the bead of cold, wet, slid down my cheek. It was you, I finished.
Daisy, I need to come to you.
No, he didn't. I needed to go to him. And that was what I did. Scared. No, terrified. But slowly, one foot in front of the other, I did it, and he watched me every step of the way. And when I got just a little bit close, he bent way forward. His long arms coming right out, his fingers grasped me at my hips and pulled me into his lap. Then he kissed me. It was soft and it was sweet. But it was more. The tip of his tongue touched my lips, and I instantly let him inside. He swept in, his arms around me closing tighter. He twisted at his waist, leaned into me, and I felt my back hit the couch, the warmth of his broad chest pressing to mine, his hand diving in my curls and closing around my scalp. I had my arms around his shoulders, one hand curved tight around the back of his neck, and I kissed him back, trying to come even a little bit close to giving him back all he'd given me. Daisies, lobster, laughter, patience, understanding, everything. I pressed my breasts into his chest. He groaned, then growled into my mouth, but I felt it in my coochie, and he took the kiss deeper. One of his arms curving down, his hand gliding down my side, his trajectory I knew to my ass. But before he got there, that arm locked tight around my waist, his lips slid from mine to my neck, and he kissed me there. Then he held me that way, his warm breath coming fast against my neck, all the other warmth of his hard body pressed to me. I didn't get it, so I called, "Marcus?"
"Taking this slow."
He answered a question I didn't exactly ask, and he sounded like it was the last thing he wanted to do, not just saying it, doing what he said. That was sweet. I was sure I needed it. "Still, you could have maybe taken second base," I shared. His head came up, his twinkling eyes caught mine, and he was smiling.
"Maybe next time."
"Look forward to that," I mumbled.
"Now I'm going to make you breakfast."
I frowned and asked, "Whose apartment is this?"
"Yours,"
he answered, still smiling. "So rules are, I have a drama, the morning after you can make me breakfast. I don't have a drama, which, honey bunches of oats, I'm hoping to be drama-free for a good long while. I'll make breakfast. Comprende?" I knew what I was saying, but more, he knew it, and he liked it a whole lot.
"Deal,"
he replied, eyes still twinkling. "Do you like pancakes?" I asked.
"Yes,"
he answered. I squinted at him. "Got a load of your six-pack, sugar." And I had. His chest and stomach were better than his back. Well, not really. It was just that I didn't mind losing the sight of his back if I had his chest and abs to look at, or his shoulders, or his face.
"Daisy."
On my name, he sounded like he was laughing. I stopped thinking about his chest and other things and focused on him. "Yep, laughing. Pull yourself together, girl." "Sorry," I muttered, then rallied. "So if I make you pancakes, will your body rebel and I'll have to take you to the hospital? Or will you have to eat nothing but celery for 2 weeks to make up for it?"
"I cooked in your kitchen, honey,"
he reminded me.
"I didn't notice many healthy options."
"I'm Southern. If it isn't fried, griddled, or grilled, it's grilled, griddled, or fried. We might get up to some boiling, but only if it's crawfish, lobster, or shrimp, and I don't have none of that." I hesitated, making a mental grocery list before I concluded, "Right now."
"I'm thinking I'll have to add another hour to my workout every day if you're doing the cooking."
My eyes got big. "You work out every day?" His body shook against mine with his laughter, and his words shook with it, too.
"Yes."
"That explains it," I muttered.
"Daisy."
I focused again on him and not the delicious vision of him working out. "Yeah?"
"You have a beautiful body, too."
I smiled. "Thanks, sugar, that's sweet."
"You're welcome, darling,"
he said warmly.
"But what I'm saying is, you have that body. You also have 3 packets of bacon, and only because I cooked up the last of the opened one yesterday, so before you had 3.5.
"This is true," I confirmed, like having 4 packets of bacon, and I made another mental note for my grocery list that I was one down, was the most natural thing in the world. Because it was.
"And you don't work out?"
he asked, then added with his arms giving me a squeeze.
"Every day?"
"I strip. Then I practice stripping. Then I help the other girls practice stripping, doing it by showing them some good moves." I paused before I finished. "And I power walk."
"Ah,"
he murmured. "I also have to cart around these bazungas," I shared, deciding not to take my arm from around him, because I liked my arms around him. In order to gesture to said bazungas, he couldn't exactly miss since he was lying on them. "And I burned some calories, believe you me." He was still murmuring and his eyes were still twinkling when he said,
"I bet."
It was then I decided to remove an arm from around him, but only so I could put a hand to his jaw and rub my thumb over the dark stubble on his cheek. It rasped against the pad of my thumb and felt nice. Real nice. And I watched the twinkle in his eye disappear, but only so he could replace it with something I liked just as much. I kept doing this with my thumb as I said softly, "I need some aspirin, baby. I got me a little hangover from last night, and it's all good with you looking hot on my couch and being hot while kissing me and then being sweet while talking about pancakes. But that's setting in again, so I gotta get on doing something about it and then feeding my hot guy."
"You have an extra toothbrush?"
My eyes rolled back to study my bangs for a second as I mentally inventoried my bathroom drawers. Then I looked at him again and said, "Yeah."
You get me that, I'll get you the water and aspirin, then you can start cooking.
I grinned at him. Deal. We were sitting at my dinette, and I was shoveling in pancakes while envisioning the dining room table I was going to buy when I got my new place. This in an effort not to envision what Marcus's shoulders looked like under the shirt he'd put back on. He was fine in that shirt. He was finer out of it. Marcus was shoveling in pancakes, too, though he was classier about it. How'd you get all classy? I asked.
Sorry?
He asked back. I circled my fork with its hunk of pancakes dripping syrup at him. You said you didn't have much growing up. Your daddy played the ponies, your sister was a stripper, but you look and act like a Kennedy except hotter and without forgetting how to pronounce your R's.
Got a job at a country club to help my sister out when I was 14.
He shared. I nodded.
Some of the adults were all right. The rest acted like I didn't exist. The kids were jackasses.
I've got no doubt, I murmured, watching him like a hawk.
I belong to that country club now.
His words socked me right in the chest in a very happy way. Real slow. I felt a smile spread on my face. You knew what you wanted, you made it happen. He gave one nod.
Exactly.
I'd made a decision. I was scared to death of it, but I'd made it and I'd shared it with Marcus. It was time to get to the important stuff. You want baby sugar? I asked quietly.
Yes.
I let out the breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding after I asked my question and before I asked another one. How many?
As many as my wife will let me make.
Excellent answer.
Do you want them, Daisy?
Yes.
How many?
As many as my man will let me make. We sat there, not eating, just staring at each other. I broke the silence by giving him the honesty. Just saying, darling, this taking it slow is not real easy. His eyes heated, but his face went soft.
Let me take care of you,
he whispered. I didn't know. I couldn't keep up. He gave me a lot of it. But in that moment, those words felt like the sweetest Marcus had ever given to me. I pressed my lips together, rolled them, and nodded.
I like it that you don't want slow, but you need it, baby.
He went on. He was probably right about that, even if after that kiss on my couch that morning I wanted him to be wrong. I didn't offer him these thoughts. I just kept nodding.
Dinner tonight, my house.
He decreed. His lips curled up slightly.
Since it's my house, I'm cooking for you, honey.
The lip curl went away as his tone grew firm.
And I want you to bring a bag, but I'm sleeping in the guest room and you're not.
What could I do? I'd made a decision, and Marcus knew that decision. And on the other point, it was his house. Maybe one day, I hoped, please God did I hope, I could horn in and do what a good woman should do for her man, that being the cooking. And I didn't think on what Marcus and his six-pack had in his fridge. I was Southern. I could eat a strawberry if it was on the bottom of a champagne glass and some Brussels sprouts if they were coated in bacon grease, but that's about as far as it went. But right now, I had one choice. And for once in my life, it was a good choice. So I again nodded.
Eat,
he ordered.
I need to get to work.
I just kept nodding. He gave me a sweet smile. And then we both ate. Chapter 8. Just a Dream. Daisy. That evening I sat next to Marcus in the back of his big limousine, Ronald driving, again wearing sunglasses, seriously, and night had fallen and everything. Brady sitting next to him in the front, Marcus sitting next to me with his fingers fiddling with mine against his thigh. He was on his phone. It had been a surprise when Brady, not Marcus, had collected me at my door, taken my bag and also putting his hand to the small of my back as he escorted me to the car. When Brady opened the door to let me in, Marcus was on the phone, but his gaze was on me. However, the instant I sat my ass next to him, he muttered into his cell,
"I need a moment."
He didn't wait for whoever he was talking to give him that moment. He put his hand over the bottom half of his phone, leaned into me, brushed my lips with his, then slanted his head and kissed my neck. He pulled away and said,
"I'm sorry, honey. This is important. I'll try not to let it take too long."
I just had my man's man collect me from my door, carry my bag, guide me chivalrously to a limousine in the back of which was my man. He could be on the phone for an hour, too. With all that and the way he greeted me and apologized, I didn't give a shit. To communicate this, I smiled at him, nodded, settled my ass into the leather, and it was then he took my hand, pulled it to his thigh, and started fiddling with my fingers. We drove from my building that was on the east side of Cherry Creek past Colorado Boulevard into downtown. It took Marcus all that time to wind down his phone call, and he only flipped his cell shut when Ronald hit the indicator and made a turn into underground parking.
"Sorry, darling,"
Marcus murmured, and I turned my head to him.
"How was your day?"
"I watched Gone with the Wind, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and Fried Green Tomatoes, so I'm topped up in Southern Diva goodness." He grinned.
"Does that ever run low?"
I shook my head. "And hair. I'd gone with my Farrah Fawcett flips, waves, and curls run amok except bigger look, but said, I'm not taking any chances." His grin became a smile. He tugged on my hand and pulled me in so he could touch his lips to my forehead. About that time, Ronald pulled into a spot and stopped, so I tore my eyes from Marcus's retreating lips and looked out the windshield. There was a big sign on the concrete wall in front of the spot that said, "Reserved. Penthouse." Penthouse? The door at my side opened, and Marcus let my hand go to put his to my hip and give it a light shove, encouraging in a murmur,
"Let's get you fed, baby."
I slid out. That was when I saw in front of the three spots next to the limousine, one that held Marcus's Mercedes, one that held a black Escalade, and since the Escalade was so big I didn't see what the other one held, but I did see the same sign on the wall that was in front of the limo and the other spots. 4 parking spaces. All his. My lord. Marcus took my hand and led me to the elevator that was right next to the parking spot the limo was in. But of course the owner of the penthouse would have all the best spots. The elevator came, we got in, Brady got in with us, Ronald and his sunglasses did too. And it was Ronald that tapped in a code on the elevator pad, then hit the button that had the letters PH. They stood in front of us. We stood at the back. I looked up at Marcus. "You said you had a condo." He looked down at me.
"I do."
"A condo penthouse?" He grinned again and squeezed my hand. "Lobsters, limos, and penthouses. You're something, sugar," I muttered.
"I'll take that as good,"
he replied. I looked to the backs of the boys in front of me, stating, "Seeing as that's how I meant it, you go right ahead." At that, he let my hand go, but only so he could curve his arms around my waist and curl me so my front was pressed to his side. I looked up at him again. "This is a long ride, darling. Your penthouse on the moon?" With that, he burst out laughing, and I loved every second of it, hearing it and watching it. Unfortunately, in the middle of it, the elevator doors opened. We walked out into a plush little hallway that had an armchair and a table with a lamp on it, over which was a mirror. All this for reasons I didn't know, since you needed a code to get to that floor, so I suspected no one would be hanging there waiting for Marcus to get home. It also had a big, gleaming wooden door that had to be a foot bigger than normal doors on every side. This had a shining brass door handle that would fit a manor house, except it was snazzier. Marcus walked us to it, but didn't fit a key into the door. He slid aside the door over a panel on the wall I hadn't even noticed and entered another code. I heard the lock unlatch. He opened the door and positioned me to move through it with his hand at my back, saying to the boys,
"Tomorrow."
"Yes, boss,"
I heard Brady say.
Ronald wasn't a big talker, apparently, since he again said nothing. "Later, boys," I called, looking over my shoulder at them as Marcus pressed me in.
Brady grinned at me. Ronald just stared at me through his apparently ever-present sunglasses. Marcus shut the door. My gaze went to Marcus, and I saw Brady had handed off my bag to him. "Does Ronald not like me?" He got close.
"Ronald likes beer, brats, broncos, and busty women, not in that order. He hasn't shared, but if I had to guess, my guess would be he loves you."
That was good, but I wasn't sure it was true. "Brady seems friendly," I noted. "Ronald, not so much."
"Brady is friendly because that's part of Brady being Brady. Ronald is old school, and as far as he's concerned, he isn't paid to be friendly. Especially not to any woman I'd bring dinner to or have sitting next to me in my car.
I tip my head to the side. How many of those are there?
In my car, enough. Bringing dinner to, one.
I smiled. He smiled back and got closer.
I'm going to change. Then I'll show you around. After that, I'll start dinner.
Sounds like a plan.
Make yourself at home.
He invited, lifted his hand, touched my nose, then turned and sauntered up some stairs, carrying my bag with him. That was when I noticed the stairs. They swept at a curve off to the side of the entry, and they had an elegantly carved banister, the likes I'd never seen. All whorls and swirls, it was amazing. And the treads of the stairs were covered with a thick, opulent carpet in the color of the palest mushroom. Beyond that, I took in floor-to-ceiling windows with an uninterrupted view of the front range. Uninterrupted except for the elegant drape of oyster-colored curtains pulled back at the sides. And in the space just beyond the staircase, on gleaming parquet floors, sat a table with a massive spray of delicate butterscotch-colored flowers. The top I didn't know, these rising up from a huge crystal vase. Two curved, elegant chairs sat at angles to the table for no reason whatsoever, except to look posh, seeing as no one would sit there unless Marcus was throwing a big party. I hadn't even walked in, and I knew his place wasn't class. It was class. He had all this. He could come from living a life that was close to squalor and build a life where this was what he saw when he got home. And he picked me. Me. He'd not only picked me, he'd said he'd waited 35 years for me. So I stood just inside his door, and I did this not feeling uncomfortable. I felt for the only time in my life outside the time I hit the Denver city limits like I was right where I was supposed to be. What I wasn't going to do was make myself at home. No, I reckoned if the entry was that fabulous, the rest was going to blow my mind, and I wanted to experience it with Marcus. So I didn't leave the entry. I walked to the windows, stared out at the front range, and waited for him to come back.
Honey, I told you to make yourself at home.
I turned to see Marcus coming down the final wind to the stairs wearing another pair of nice jeans, these topped with a garnet-colored sweater with a handsome, manly shawled collar. I didn't want to experience your place without you with me, I told him. I looked past his face right before he got in my space. I didn't have a chance to figure out what the look meant, seeing as a nanosecond after he got in my space, I was in his arms and he was kissing me. And that kiss was another doozy, slightly less of one than what he gave me that morning, seeing as we were standing up and we both had on more clothes. Well, Marcus did. I had on a pair of faded jeans with strategically placed worn spots, a lot of them. High-heeled, gray leather cowboy boots with turquoise ostrich feathers stitched in, and a silvery off-the-shoulder sweater that held onto my boobs by a miracle. So not more clothes, exactly. Just more cleavage. Kind of. The kiss was still a doozy. When he lifted his head, I was having trouble breathing, and I was holding on to his shoulders because my legs had gone weak.
"Want a tour?"
he whispered. Hell yes, I wanted a tour. Though I'd prefer another kiss. Horizontal again this time? I didn't share that. I nodded. He grinned. Then he let me go, took my hand, and gave me a tour. I won't just say I was right. The entry was pure class. The rest of it was like a dream.
I'm having Kelly clear my schedule so next week we can go to my place in Aspen.
I sat at his side at his impressive dining room table where he sat at the head, a fork with linguine wrapped around its tines. Marcus's homemade, buttery, garlicky clam sauce dripping off it halfway to my mouth, and I looked to him. There was a lot there. I didn't know where to start, so I started with the easiest part. Kelly? I asked, then shoved the pasta into my mouth.
My PA.
He answered, reaching to the bottle of Sauvignon Blanc that was in a silver bucket filled with ice on the table. Yes, Marcus had a silver wine bucket, making me think that perhaps he had it all and I wasn't talking about shit you could buy. Just it all. He refilled my wine while I asked my next. You have a place in Aspen? He put the bottle back and his eyes came to me as he replied,
Yes.
A twirled linguine. What else you got?
A beach house on Coronado and a set of 6 lots that I bought in Englewood 4 years ago that had houses on them that were in a great neighborhood but not in great shape. I had them raised and then had a number of trees planted so when the time came for me to build there, I'd be in the city, close to work, but I'd have nature around me, peace, quiet, and privacy.
A beach house in Coronado? Nice. And peace, quiet, and privacy? That sounded real good.
Mm-hmm. I mutter to my linguine before I put it into my mouth.
Does that trouble you?
I chewed, swallowed, and answered, Why would it trouble me?
You seem troubled,
he remarked. I put my fork on my plate and gave him my full attention. I'm not troubled that evidence is suggesting you're a lot more loaded than I thought you were, and I thought you were pretty loaded, sugar.
I said my next, watching him carefully, which was the same way I was speaking. I'm troubled because you want to take me to Aspen next week when I'm going to be back at work.
His head tipped a bit to the side, but other than that, he didn't look ticked. However, he did ask,
You're going back to work?
Yes.
So soon?
It's not soon, Honey Bunch, I told him cautiously. By the time I go back, I'll have been on vacation a month.
That got me a scary look as his eyes went hard.
You weren't on vacation, Daisy.
I've been away, I said quietly, and I'm a draw. I'm not on that stage. They don't need the rope outside, and the only person who doesn't hurt because of that is me, seeing as Smithy has me on paid leave, and he pays me a whack. But you know that, I'm sure.
He inclined his head and kept his gaze on me.
I do.
So I need to get back to work. I shot him a smile. And anyway, I'm running out of Southern movies to watch. The Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood is a kick-ass book, but the movie sucks.
Marcus reached for his bread, murmuring,
I'll talk to Smithy. He can wait a week while we're in Aspen, and when we come back, if you still want to dance, you can go back then.
I didn't get into the if you still want to dance part. I said, I already arranged it with Smithy, Marcus.
He chewed his bread, swallowed, and locked his eyes on me.
I'll rearrange it.
Oh, boy. Okay, sugar, just to say that's my job and Smithy's my boss. I know you got a stake in that club, but he's my boss, and we got it arranged.
And like I said, I'll rearrange it.
I got a Porsche to pay for.
And you're on paid leave.
He shook his head and took up his fork.
It's too soon.
Honey, I need to get back to life. I had my time. I got my daisies. I did my drama. I'm not saying nothing else is going to spring up with all that and bite me in the ass. I'm going to have my moments. But now, sitting around the house is one long moment that reminds me my life was interrupted by that asshole.
You won't be thinking about that in Aspen with me.
True enough, I agreed. And I want to do that, Marcus. I really do. I've never been to Aspen, and I bet it's real pretty. And it's sweet you want to spend time with me there. It's just sweet you like spending time with me. But Smithy takes care of me. It's time I take care of him right back. Maybe after a while I can take a few days and we can go.
Smithy's fine, Daisy.
Without me there, Smithy's bleeding money, Marcus.
He isn't.
Maybe you don't get to look at the books, but when I say he pays me a whack, he pays me a whack.
His gaze steady on me. He socked it to me.
He doesn't. I do. I cover your salary, Daisy, and I have for the last 2 months.
Say what? I whispered.
I pay your salary. Smithy couldn't afford you.
But I was stuck on the last 2 months. The last 2 months. The last 2 months where that time ago Smithy took away a whole set, one song off the other sets, and ended my lap dances but increased my pay so much my eyeballs burned when I got a good look at the first paycheck, and... 2 months? Before the rape? Before anything?
Say what? I repeated, not on a whisper, on a breath.
I didn't want you on the stage for 4 sets with those sets being 3 songs, too long alone up there and exposed. And I definitely didn't want you doing lap dances. So to cover the loss and tips that would be, we elevated your salary, and because Smithy couldn't pay that and it wasn't his decision, I covered it.
He didn't know me.
No, but I knew I wanted to.
I stared at him. Then I started, Why didn't you... I cut myself off because it felt all of a sudden like something was stuck in my throat and I thought it pertinent to focus on breathing.
Daisy?
Marcus looked concerned.
I put a hand flat on the table and pushed through the thing choking me. That was 2 months ago.
Darling.
Before he got to me.
Marcus went still.
I pushed up on my hand, shoved back my seat, and took my feet. Why didn't you come to me?
I screeched.
He was out of his seat, too, and approaching me.
Daisy.
I scuttled back and lifted up a hand, but he didn't stop moving, so I didn't either as I bit out. Don't come near me.
I had things happening,
he said quietly.
You saw me. You knew you wanted to take your shot, I hissed. It all was coming to me, pouring over me like boiling oil. That day you were there and you left without even looking at me, you were up in Smithy's office with Smithy. The next day, Smithy gave me my raise. You saw me, you knew then.
He kept coming at me, stalking me around the table.
When I made my approach, Daisy, I wanted it to have my full attention.
If I was Marcus Sloane's mole, no one would even think of touching me.
I couldn't have known you'd be raped, baby.
I shook my head, still retreating while he advanced, and he did it, speaking.
And you're wrong. Men like that, I don't get how they can do the things they do. But if he had that monstrousness in his head, it's doubtful anyone could have stopped him, even me.
He was making sense, and I didn't need sense. I need to go, I forced out.
It's not my fault.
That made me stop dead. The words and the tortured way he said them. When I stopped, he moved in, hands cupping the sides of my head. He held it back and bent his face to mine.
It's not my fault, honey. It isn't anyone's fault. If I could have stopped it, I would. If I could make a miracle and go back in time to erase it, I would. But I can't. And you could have been mine then, and unless I had reason to put a man on you, which I can't say I would do, not in the beginning. It might alarm you, and I would do nothing that might alarm you. He would have found his way to get to you.
I shook my head in his hands, then nodded it. You're right. He stared into my eyes.
Just take a breath,
he urged. I did that. Then I said it. I'm sorry. I shoved my head through his hand so I could plant my face in his chest, and I grabbed onto his sweater at the sides of his waist. God, I'm so sorry. He wrapped his arms around me, murmuring into the top of my hair.
It's okay.
I let his sweater go so I could wrap my arms around him, too. Marcus held me, and I held him back. Eventually, still in my hair, he said softly,
Thinking this is one of those moments you were talking about.
Yeah, I muttered, embarrassed, so I shoved my face deeper into his chest. God, I'm so, so sorry.
Don't apologize.
I tipped my head back. It was stupid. It wasn't even logical.
You get a pass on being illogical, at least for another month or six, or seeing as you're female another 70 years.
I narrowed my eyes at him. He grinned down at me. His grin faded. His look grew probing, and he whispered,
Good.
I stopped giving him the stink eye and nodded, Yeah, honey.
Go to Aspen with me.
And the hot guy takes advantage, I muttered. His grin came back.
I didn't get where I am pissing away opportunities either, Daisy.
I rolled my eyes. He gave me a light shake. I rolled them back.
Aspen,
he pushed. I need to take care of Smithy. He studied me. Then he sighed. It took a lot, but I didn't smile my triumph, just felt it warm me deep down inside. But I got serious when I asked, You pay me?
Yes.
Is that, gonna continue?
Do you like stripping?
I'm fucking amazing on that stage. He shook his head, but did it with his lips curled up, holding me tight.
Then yes, it'll continue as long as you want to be on that stage.
I rocked a private dance, sugar, but I can't say they were my favorite things. They were just below having my eyes burned out with a red-hot fire poker, having my nails ripped out at the roots, and having a really bad hair day. He started chuckling. It looked good on him, but I didn't join in. When Marcus noticed my seriousness, he sobered and asked,
What?
There's nothing I can ever... He let me go with one hand to put two fingers to my lips. When I shut up, he took his fingers away and said,
Something else my sister taught me. If you can give it, you don't blink at giving someone you care about something they need or they want. No matter how deep it cuts, how much it costs, how steep the price might be in a different way. It's an honor and it's a blessing. So giving you the things I can give you means I'm honored and blessed, Daisy. Please don't take that away from me.
I stared up at him thinking Marcus Sloan wasn't like a dream. He was just a dream. And on that thought, I blurted, Miss Anna May would love you. Again, something new moved over his face, and I held my breath at its splendor.
Consider me paid back,
he whispered. Lord, he was killing me. Oh, my God, I snapped. You're gonna make me cry again.
Cry in your linguine, darling. It's getting cold,
he returned, pulling me to his side and guiding me back to my chair. I sat, he sat, then I groused. Who would have thought some asshole cheating on me or beating on me would be easier to take than some hot guy honored and blessed to spoil me rotten?
You'll get used to it,
Marcus murmured to his linguine. I stared at his dark head bent over his plate right along with feeling my heart contract. He lifted that head, swallowed, and asked,
What?
I don't know whether to throw something at you or jump you. He grinned a wicked grin that set my coochie to buzzing.
We're taking it slow, remember?
Yeah, right. Great. He kept grinning and the buzzing got stronger. Stop turning me on, I warned.
Stop being cute,
he fired back. I stuck my tongue out at him. He watched it, then looked in my eyes.
That didn't work.
Whatever, I muttered, grabbed my bread and gnawed off a huge chunk with my teeth. Marcus burst out laughing, and I loved the sound. Whatever. Marcus ripped his mouth from mine, rested his forehead against mine, and murmured a labored,